Hello and welcome to another episode of the SASMA podcast. Today, I am joined by Taylor Ross, a very well-qualified biokineticist from Cape Town, South Africa. Taylor qualified in 2019 and received the Biokinetic Association of South Africa Student of the Year Award, as well as achieving her MPhil in biokinetics in 2021. She is currently lecturing at UCT and completing her PhD. Taylor's MPhil dissertation focused on cardiac rehabilitation in the public sector, which is the basis of our conversation today. Good afternoon and welcome, Taylor.
Hi, Kyle. Thank you so much for having me today. It's such a privilege to be here.
And yeah, thank you for giving of your time and joining us. So please just give us some insight into yourself and your passion for exercise medicine, as well as your role in physical health and chronic diseases.
Sure. So you got the story pretty much correct. So I did my honors at UCT in 2019, then went on to my master's, which I completed in 2021, and now on to my PhD. So I think it's very clear that I'm extremely passionate about what I do, and I really do believe that exercise is medicine, and it's something that we should all be employing as healthcare professionals. I guess you could say my passion for exercise kind of started, I was a ballerina, actually, so I danced professionally. I've been active since I was a kid, and I've firsthand worked with bios. I had a number of different injuries as a ballerina, and I started working with bios as a high school student, actually, and I really saw a difference in my performance and in my injury risk firsthand. And, you know, having worked with patients and seen the benefits that they get, patients from ranging from chronic disease and non-communicable diseases to neurological patients. So that's actually my passion. That's what my PhD is about. I've really seen the impact that exercise and rehabilitation can have on somebody's life. And so I'm a huge advocate for it. And I really believe a lot in what we do as bios.
Yeah, 100%. And I think if you could give a little bit more insight into the role of the biokineticist, especially in the multidisciplinary team. Exercise as medicine, but as well as in I guess in professional environments, but also our non-professional environments.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of misconception about what we can and can't do. We are a relatively new profession compared to something like physiotherapy. So biokineticists, we are registered and recognized health professionals with the Health Professionals Council of South Africa. And we work in collaboration with other healthcare professionals. So that would include specialist physicians such as sports medicine physicians, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, just to name a few. And our ultimate goal is to improve physical health status, functioning, well-being, and quality of life through individualized and scientific assessment and exercise prescription. So we're capable of working in a variety of different areas. I think there's a common misconception that we work only with chronic illness patients, but this is definitely not the case. So we're able to work in terms of final phase orthopedic injury rehabilitation, so anything from an ACL to an ankle sprain or generalized lower back pain. We do health promotion for apparently healthy populations and special populations, so individuals with disabilities, pregnant women, children, geriatric populations, sports performance, and then the management of chronic illness and disabilities as well. So we're really capable of working in such a broad range of different areas, which I think is such a privilege as a healthcare professional.
Yeah, and I think it's important for example, for myself and other fellow sport and exercise medicine practitioners to be aware of your role in the team and how much you can contribute to the overall success of an athlete or the outcome of a patient. I mean, that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you. I think it's important to mention that, like, when it comes to orthopedic rehab, we're mostly functioning in final phase. So you're not going to find us in a hospital trying to mobilize a patient after a knee replacement, but you will find us, you know, 6 to 12 weeks later working with those patients. And in the management of chronic illness, you know, we're not coming in right at the end after a heart attack. We're actually getting involved in preventing the onset of cardiovascular disease and the progression of these illnesses as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can touch a little bit on those current, like, perceptions and misconceptions in our healthcare system. I mean, what are your challenges and experiences on that public versus private sector on exercise, and I mean, and your role thereof, but also, I guess, now dealing a bit into what you dealt with your master's on cardiac disease?
Gosh, you're opening a can of worms. So both my master's and actually my PhD are both within the public healthcare sector. And Oh gosh, there's so many challenges. I mean, out of our entire population, actually the private sector is only serving 16% of the entire South African population, and the public health sector is serving 84%. And we have this massive discrepancy between health services in both the public and private sectors. And that's leading to this problem of inadequate healthcare, particularly for those that are within the public healthcare system. You know, we know that the public healthcare is characterized by a huge number of problems, long waiting times, there's a huge number of patients, the infrastructure is sometimes poorly maintained, there's inadequate human resources, there's lack of material resources, lack of equipment, lack of supplies. You know, we have some of the best doctors in the world, but unfortunately we're overburdened and we're under-resourced. So we need a solution to this, and I think that is where we as biokineticists can actually come in. We can provide the staff complement that's required to implement the exercise programs that the doctors don't have time to do for the management and prevention of cardiovascular disease and other non-communicable diseases.
100%. And I mean, I think the important thing is now, you know, what can we do? So as you say, is you know, working together to try and manage that burden, but also who are the type of patients that we are targeting here?
You know, as bios, especially in terms of cardiovascular disease, there's a number of indications and contraindications for exercise. So the patients that are usually indicated for exercise rehab are the medically stable ones. So patients with stable angina, stable heart failure. You know, we're not looking for patients that have uncontrolled hypertension or untreated diabetes or uncontrolled diabetes. It's the medically stable patients. And there's numerous different ways that you can classify or risk stratify these patients, but we usually go according to the American College of Sports Medicine. So usually you would find the bios working with the lower risk patients. So those are the ones that don't have these complex ventricular arrhythmias. They have normal hemodynamics. They don't have congestive heart failure. They have a resting ejection fraction that is exceeding 50. Their functional capacity exceeds 7 mets. So usually would find us working more with those lower risk patients. If we want to start working with more moderate risk patients, I think it's important to clarify that we have to have supervision of a sports medicine physician or a qualified physician when working with these patients, because obviously the higher the risk or the higher risk level these patients are at, the more likely they are to experience some kind of adverse event. And in those cases, we should always have supervision of the appropriate professional with us when we are prescribing and performing exercise.
Yeah, and I think you touched on an important point there is to follow specific guidelines, and the ACSM guidelines on exercise testing and approaching patients with cardiac problems are extremely important to be familiar with
for
practitioners, just to guide them as to, you know, who can exercise safely, who might need to be observed and watched, and who might we need to perform stress tests on to ensure their safety in being able to exercise post any cardiac disease.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, let's go through a couple of scenarios and your approach to different types of patients, or how you would approach two types of patients. So, I mean, my first one would be a common one that we see in our clinics would be a, you know, more of a younger age of a 40-year-old female. She comes in with newly diagnosed high blood pressure, but it's well controlled. She's also been diagnosed with a high cholesterol, but she's getting it under control, but she's also a smoker. What would your approach to this type of patient be?
So, I mean, she hasn't yet had a cardiac event, but, you know, carrying on this trajectory, she is obviously at risk for one. So I think first thing that is important to do when the patient appears at your clinic is the appropriate pre-screening. So whether you're using the ACSM's risk stratification, if you're using something like a PARQ, just to ensure that she is actually safe to participate in exercise and determine whether or not we actually need to refer to a physician for an exercise stress test or a stress ECG. But she's a relatively straightforward patient that I would say is safe to exercise under the appropriate supervision of a biokineticist. I think the big thing that we would mostly be intervening on here is her blood pressure. So with any hypertensive patient, our primary intervention is going to be cardiovascular exercise, so aerobic exercise. we're mostly going to be employing that. We know that that has huge benefits on improving blood pressure control and lowering blood pressure. Very, very important that with any hypertensive patient that we monitor their blood pressure very closely. So that is before, during, and after exercise. And then avoiding any exercise that's going to increase blood pressure. So we would want to be avoiding Valsalva maneuver that can increase intra-abdominal pressure and further increase blood pressure. And then heavy overhead exercises. So no very heavy weights overhead. And then in terms of the high cholesterol, we know that just general exercise, aerobic exercise, helps to lower serum cholesterol. I think another very big thing here is patient education. So a lot of people think that all we do as bios is we count reps, which we're not very good at, and we just instruct exercise. But honestly, we're capable of doing so much more. Patient education is a huge part of what we do, especially with our chronic disease and our NCD patients. So educating on lifestyle change to better manage disease, to prevent cardiovascular disease progression. So including, you know, we can't give specific dietary advice, but we can give generalized dietary advice. Counseling on exercise, so on encouraging the patient to get active, not just within our sessions, but also outside of that. Things that they can do at home, parking further away from the shopping entrance to walk a little bit further, you know, doing exercises like sit to stands or marching on the spot during ad breaks on the TV. So counseling them on how they can get active on the day to day and at home. And then smoking cessation is obviously a very, very big one. Counseling behavior change there is particularly difficult, and sometimes in some cases we need to refer to a psychologist. But yeah, patient education, I think, for this patient on her current status of health and on the path that she is currently on to ensure that her cardiovascular disease doesn't progress further, I think would be a very, very big part of the intervention for this patient.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think the education side is a responsibility of any practitioner, whether it be a doctor, a biokineticist, a physio, dietitian. I think that's one of the most important parts of the consultation in preventing further cardiac disease and complications.
Absolutely. Yeah, I 100% agree with you.
So then I will just change it a little bit. So, you know, this is a more newly diagnosed, well-controlled patient, but let's take someone else on the spectrum, a 55-year-old gentleman with a recent myocardial infarction. He had to have two stents, and his risk factors was that he was a smoker with uncontrolled blood pressure that's now controlled. What would you do for him?
So again, now that there is a cardiac event, I think this patient's obviously slightly higher risk, and there's definitely a few more considerations we need to take when exercising. So again, appropriate medical clearance, very, very important, ensuring that the patient is screened prior to engaging any exercise. So in the case of this patient, I think an exercise stress test or a stress ECG would definitely be indicated. And the reason that that is so important is that that allows us to set a heart rate limit for exercise. So essentially, what heart rate range can we safely work within that is not going to lead to another MI. So I think that is really, really important that we emphasize that the patient is cleared appropriately and that we are given the heart rate limit to work within. You know, then your exercise is much the same. Again, with our cardiovascular patients, cardiovascular aerobic exercise is your most important modality. ACSM recommends 3 to 5 days of moderate intensity, well, actually 40 to 80% of the exercise capacity. In practice, we usually use 10 beats less than their max heart rate limit that they achieve on their stress ECG. And that's usually for 20 to 60 minutes at a time. But then there's also guidelines for resistance training. So resistance training is so, so important to include in any patient's rehabilitation. And that we usually recommend 2 to 3 non-consecutive days per week, between 1 to 3 sets of exercise for 10 to 15 reps and focusing on all major muscle groups. And then there's guidelines for flexibility as well, but I won't go too much into that. Again, that's roughly 2 to 3 days per week. So we usually pair it with our resistance exercise. I think for this patient, again, it's important to mention that monitoring throughout the session very, very important. So blood pressure before, during and after, heart rate before, during and after, and then RPE as well. So we often use RPE with our cardiac patients, especially those that are on beta blockers, as their heart rate response to exercise is attenuated. So monitoring, very, very close, careful monitoring of this patient throughout the session is going to be very, very important.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, again, as you said there at the end, the monitoring is also important, and also to be familiar with what the criteria is to stop an exercise session in terms of the symptoms that they experience. But I think the big point here is for our listeners is to also start to realize that there is a role and a place to involve the entire team in any patient, whether they are pre-disease, post-disease, and then even a patient in heart failure or with a recent MI, there's a role of introducing exercise as medicine in their recovery.
Yeah. As a bit of a side note, like we often say in this country, we have sick care, we don't have health care. And that's because we're intervening when it's already a little bit too late. We're not intervening early enough to actually promote health and prevent people from getting to that, like, end stages of heart failure or end stages of cardiovascular disease. And I think that's where exercise comes in. You know, often medical aids, if we use diabetes as an example, they won't pay for exercise or a session with a biokineticist when the patient is a pre-diabetic, but they'll pay for somebody's insulin when they are diagnosed with diabetes. And I think that, you know, we need to really reframe our perspective and actually start employing this modality much earlier so that we don't have to, we don't have sick care, and that we don't have this overburdened, struggling South African healthcare system.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a very good point. And in the fact of, in the primary prevention, that how much policy change can make in preventing all of this. And in the roles that we all play, you know, we've got to get these big medical aids, the healthcare sector, our government, to, as you say, incorporate all these different role players to make these improvements.
Absolutely.
So, what would you say we should do as exercise practitioners, as in, let's say, myself, but even yourself or other practitioners, to improve the knowledge around the importance of exercise in overall cardiac health, but also to, you know, get these patients into these type of exercise settings more regularly?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think this comes back to patient education being an absolutely essential part of our jobs as healthcare professionals. We need to educate all of our patients, whether they are apparently healthy or whether they already have some kind of chronic illness. We need to educate them on the risk factors for developing cardiovascular disease. So sedentary living, obesity, smoking, high blood pressure, etc. Educating them on the signs and the symptoms of all of these different diseases as well, so that we can catch it as early as possible and intervene before it becomes too late. And then educating them on the role of exercise as well. So we know as professionals that there are so many benefits to physical activity. It is regarded as a cornerstone to maintaining cardiovascular health. You know, it's important for blood pressure management, cholesterol management, weight management, all sorts of different things. We know that as health professionals, but very often our patients don't understand that. And so actually educating them on the benefits of being physically active as well. And then I think lastly, we need to lower the barrier of entry. Unfortunately, like we spoke, 84% of South Africans are relying on public health. The vast majority of these people don't have access to fancy gyms and fancy equipment. We need to teach them how they can get active at home with minimal equipment and with minimal time as well. So we need to teach them how to monitor themselves at home as well. So educating them on how they can monitor their RPE, for example, or even understanding what RPE is, knowledge on their own signs and symptoms, and then, you know, teaching them how to use an automated blood pressure cuff, which you can get for very cheap nowadays. But I think teaching them and like lowering the barrier of entry so that it's easy for them to engage in physical activity. We don't want to make it difficult. We don't want patients to think that they need to drive to the closest Virgin Active and spend an hour on the elliptical. We need to just encourage them to be as active as possible within their busy lives as it is.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that fully. I mean, I think the differences that can be made at home are much bigger and much more impactful than something that you may achieve in an hour session at a gym. And that's exactly what we want to impart onto our patients.
Yeah, I mean, I tell this to all of my patients, but, you know, you see me for 1 hour out of your entire week and there's 24 hours in a day. What are you doing for the other 23? Because if you're going and you're sitting at home on the couch, smoking a cigarette and eating a packet of chips, you know, you're essentially undoing a large amount of what we've accomplished in that hour. So we need to counsel patients on that and encourage them to consider the other 23 hours in their day, how they're spending those as well. I mean, I, for one, I'm incredibly sedentary. I work a desk job. PhDs require a large amount of computer work. And so I really have to think about actually getting up, stretching my legs, taking the stairs instead of the lift. Small changes like that can actually make such a massive difference on somebody's life.
Yeah, and I think another point that I've just thought of would be, you know, targeting other specialists as well. So, you know, being familiar with who our cardiologists and pulmonologists and, you know, all our specialists, you know, around our area, because, you know, I think imparting knowledge onto them as well as to all of us working together in improving the patient's health can also improve their outcomes.
Absolutely. And to segue, I think that's why, like, the SASMA conference is so great, because it allows us the opportunity, like us as biokineticists, to actually connect with other physicians, other healthcare professionals, and not only educate them on what we do, but also on the importance of exercise. It's such a great opportunity for us to network and for us to spread this message of exercise as medicine.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, lastly, I mean, I think a good way to end this off is, would you like to expand on your role and the involvement of the Biokinetic Association of South Africa in the upcoming SASMA conference in October?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm obviously not privy to all of the details, but we are extremely excited and very privileged to be one of the biggest partner for SASMA in October. You know, I know as a biokineticist, like, this opportunity to come and share and speak and be a partner with such a prestigious association and such a well-known association is such an incredible opportunity. And so I know on, like, behalf of myself as a biokineticist and on behalf of our association, we are incredibly grateful and extremely excited for this opportunity.
Yeah, and as SASMA, it's definitely an exciting opportunity and an exciting initiative, you know, for all of us to, as you said, I think collaborate, engage, make contacts and you know, give each other knowledge that we didn't have going into that conference.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I love a conference. They are always such fun, and you learn so much and you meet so many people. You really do go home after 3 days feeling like your cup is full, and I think equally exhausted as well.
That's exactly. So on that note, I mean, I look forward to seeing you at the SASMA conference, and to all the listeners out there, you know, this registration is still open. You can sign up for the SASMA conference happening in Stellenbosch in mid-October. It's going to definitely be one not to miss. And we look forward to seeing you there, Taylor, as well as your incredible team.
Thank you so much, Kyle. We are so looking forward to it.
Great. Thank you so much.